Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Basketball fans, the College Ball Show returns, and we're here to discuss everything revolving around the world of college basketball. And it is the Final Four weekend coming up right here in Mindianapolis, because I know a lot of people across the country say Mindianapolis as if it's Indianapolis, but it's not. It's Minneapolis. Let's just get that straight up right now. But anyway, we are back to talk about what else. I mean, we got to talk about the Final Four. We're gonna preview and predict the Final Four games. Of course, tipping off first at just after 5 o'clock Central Time. Number one, Virginia. Yes, that's right. I said it, Virginia. I mean, we got a number one seed in the field here, but Virginia. The team that's been struggling to make a dent into the postseason, as we know, last year, they became the first ever team as the number one seed to lose in the first round. They are matched up against the overachieving, can't quite figure them out, Auburn Tigers, number five, or seeded five, I should say, the fifth seed. And then the late marquee matchup, number two, Michigan State, versus number three, Texas Tech. And I'm happy with the matchups for a variety of reasons. Yes, I know my co-host would love to see North Carolina here. I would have also liked to see them or Kentucky. Zion would be fun in Minneapolis. There's other teams that could have made it, but I'm actually pretty happy. You know, there's no one and dones. It's veteran coaches, but also veteran teams. They're interesting matchups. So we're going to break down those two games, and then based off who we think are going to win these two games, then we're going to go ahead and pick the national title game coming this Monday. So really looking forward to this segment. It's always fun, like I said, especially with the tournament here wrapping up in Minneapolis or Mindianapolis, like I said, like a lot of people say. Oh, man, have you been to Minneapolis? Man, Minneapolis is pretty cool. But before we get there, we have to discuss a little bit from last week, okay? I mean, when you look at most of the Sweet 16 games and pretty much all of the elite games, when you look at how close they were, how competitive they were, how back and forth, different lead changes there were. I mean, those, especially the Elite Eight, but just in general, the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games were some of the best, well-played. I mean, sure, some of them were ugly. Don't get me wrong. You know, Texas Tech and Michigan, that was ugly. But then again, you know, Texas Tech is known for their defense, too. So that's not a complete shocker anyway, but a variety of those games, especially the Elite Eight games, were just phenomenal and some of the best that I've seen in a long, long time. The competitiveness, the way the games came down to the wire was just was phenomenal. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com /RopeItOverRadio. Okay, it streams live, it archives, it's basically like the headquarters. We have the College Ball Show, we have a Minnesota themed Gopher and Timberwolves show, we got, of course, the boxing show. After, you know, next week, basically, we're going to jump into the NBA playoffs. We have an NBA playoff banter podcast that we do. So you can check it out right here. But if you want to listen to the College Ball Show under the Rope It Up Radio podcast, whether it be iTunes, whether it be Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn. TuneIn is a great source. Along with Player FM, we get a lot of listens through TuneIn and Player FM. You can check it out there. You can subscribe right there. Well, we're also a part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, okay? And you can find the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network at iTunes, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, all across the board, including checking it out on iHeartRadio. And you can stream it live on Spotify. You can, you know, your household Siri or Alexa, you can just use TuneIn or Spotify, and you can get the show right there. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. You can listen to the podcast, in fact, right there at thegruelingtruth.net. You can, you know, read articles. In fact, you know, I do weekly predictions for college football and college basketball throughout the year. I also do some predictions on a weekly basis there for boxing and the NBA playoffs as well. In fact, in my prediction blog for thegruelingtruth.net, I got three. That's right, three out of the four in the Final Four. You know, I don't normally toot my horn, but toot. So head on over to thegruelingtruth.net, and while you're at it, they can link it right to mybookie.ag. That's mybookie.ag. And real quick, okay, we had the March Madness deal that is over now because it expired at the end of March for DirecTV Now. If you're at home, you listen to this, and you're thinking about cutting the cord, you've been looking at your cable bill, excuse me, for quite some time, you know what? It's time to cut the cable, or you've already cut the cable and you're messing around with Sling or some other cable, you know, platform, try DirecTV Now. It's a 2-in-1 special, so I'm going to tell you just straight up what they're offering right now, but there's also a limited time offer having to do with an Apple TV 4K, okay? So we'll get into that. It's the fifth generation, by the way, but just off the top, DirecTV Now, it starts at $50 a month. You can actually try it for 7 days. It's a 7-day free trial, no annual contracts. You can stream it anywhere, your smart TV, your iPhone, your smartphone, not just the iPhone, the tablet. They have the cloud DVR. Like I said, the plans start at $50 a month. And right now, it includes HBO. So it kind of has that Game of Thrones feels / it's the NBA playoffs time coming around the corner. You need ESPN. You need TNT for live basketball. This is a good deal for you. $50 a month, HBO included, like I said, DirecTV Now. I cut the cord in last August, and I tried YouTube. I tried Sling. I tried Hulu, and I found DirecTV Now is the best out of all those. So that's what I'm on as well. And so it's just straight up, $50 a month, 7-day free trial. And obviously the packages go up from there. However, there is a new deal that's a limited time, okay? It's a limited offer. And if you prepay 4 months of DirecTV Now, they'll throw in an Apple TV 4K for free. It's a fifth generation. Maybe you already have an Apple TV. You're looking at Apple TV 4K. Maybe you have just a dated Apple TV. Maybe you have a Roku and it's old. Maybe you got a, you know, whatever you got, this throws it right in there. So it's a prepaid for 4 months. Apple TV 4K, fifth generation. And think about it. So it's about $200 right there, right? $200 for the prepay. The Apple TV 4K goes for $179. So not only are you getting your money's worth there, but you're getting 4 months. And that basically takes you right through the NBA playoffs, if that's what you're angling for. And obviously it takes you right through the Game of Thrones as well. So check it out. See what you're thinking. Boxing fans, it's only $11 for Showtime as well. So do what you will do with those, okay? I'm going to go ahead and shut up for a moment. But just a moment. You cannot shut me up all the way. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall at the start of the show. A lot of times I say, he's Marshall, I'm Chris. Well, this is Marshall, my co-host. What's going on, Marshall? How the F are you?
Not too bad, man. I had a first today. So I had a long break.
Your first Texas Tech Raiders jersey? You already bought a jersey, a Texas Tech Raiders jersey? Is that what's going on?
No, I just went to a legit barber shop and had a great haircut. I've never gone to the actual barber shop where I just BS and watch sports, and man, I actually got a great haircut.
You're going back.
So I'm kind of happy about
back.
That, man, just to be honest. Yeah,
are you going
yeah.
back
yeah, yeah.
now? That's your spot.
Oh, for sure. I'll take that over any basic great clips any day. I mean, I was actually surprised. I had a great haircut. Come back to school, kids are like, wow, coach, that's a nice haircut. I'm like, all right, decision made. I've missed out on barbershop sport talk my whole life.
Heck yeah, man. Well, there you go. There you have it.
So, yes. So, you know, if we have any great clip listeners, well, I think we might have lost one, Chris. But anyways.
Yeah.
As sports fans, you know, you kind of remember, like the championship teams or your favorite teams or the teams that should have won a title and never did, like the Randy Moss Patriots or my, like, 09 Tar Heels. Like, you remember the –
Kansas Jayhawks about 8 times?
For the Big 12, yeah, but not really much for national titles. But I say that to think normally when you look back on a sport year, it's national title and that's it. I am not sure if I can remember a March Madness, like, second weekend that, like, legit beat the one we just watched. We normally talk about, oh, man, there was this great game and this great game, and now we got the Final Four. And I'll say it, the first weekend was pretty shitty for a first opening weekend. But, my God, did this past weekend from Thursday through Sunday pretty much give you nonstop incredible basketball for almost every game. Almost every single one. It was phenomenal. I mean, the Tennessee Auburn game, I could rant on about that for half an hour. And then the Auburn Virginia, I mean, a lot of people thought from this past weekend that the Texas Tech and Zaga game was the best game of the tournament, but then that got trumped by the game after with Virginia and Purdue. Or sorry, Tennessee and Purdue. I mean,
right.
It was a miraculous weekend of basketball. And it was so weird because it was the first time ever for a Saturday and Sunday, the first round of the tournament, Chris, that all favored teams won. So the Chalk went 16-0.
Huh.
I think a majority of those teams covered. And you're like, man, there was no buzzer beaters. I went on my trip to Jacksonville, and we were just watching games, but we weren't really paying attention. Like, that first weekend's like, okay, I guess it's kind of fun. I mean, we're watching basketball, but shit. The LSU game to kick off the tournament in Auburn, I mean, those were the two best games the whole weekend. But, man, we got spoiled. It was miraculous, incredible basketball. Obviously, Duke losing made me very happy, but, shit, even the Duke-Michigan State game, another phenomenal game. Right before that, Auburn-Kentucky. I mean, I know we're going to focus on the Final Four, but, man, did we get phenomenal basketball this past Thursday through Sunday, which was a freaking joy to watch, Chris. I know, it's hard to remember the past 10 years we've been alive, but watching all these second weekends, but I don't think there's been a better one. It's normally like, man, I remember
especially
like
Elite
Louisville
Eight.
When I was in high school. You know, it just
especially Elite
it
Eight.
Was just solid. Yeah. So that's my second rant for the show. Obviously, I'll talk to you about a couple of those games, but, man, there really wasn't a bad game besides maybe – I'm trying to think. Someone got smoked from this past Thursday through Sunday, but I think there was two blowouts, and the rest was
blowouts.
Just kick your feet back.
Texas Tech and Michigan, and then, well, I don't know. I'll bring it up in a little bit. Yeah, dude, you're right. When you're right, you're right. You know, the first weekend was okay. You know, it wasn't phenomenal. Like you said, there wasn't a there wasn't a whole lot that happened. The first, all three seeds, top three seeds made it through the first round. Like, there was some upsets. There was the 5-12s and some close games. But,
sure.
Yeah, in general, it wasn't awesome. It was real kind of just mediocre. But you're right, dude. I mean, I said it at the beginning of the show, too. It's like it's really hard. It's one of the best, if not the best, especially Elite Eight games in a row like that. And let's just talk about them a little bit as far as just kind of guiding our way to the Elite Eight and obviously to this coming weekend with the Final Four matchups and this Monday night as well. And, you know, Gonzaga took care of business 72-58, Florida State. Florida State was, if you know, within range to do something. They just never really did it. If you look at Texas Tech and Michigan, 44 points, that's the lowest output. I mean, we knew that those, besides Virginia, those teams are the top teams defensively. So you didn't think it would be in the 80s, you know what I mean? But holy cow, when it was 24-14, I'm thinking, what in the hell? I didn't know it was going to be like this. And I actually work with somebody that's a really big Michigan fan, her and her longtime boyfriend. And I said, you know, the night before, I was like, hey, you know, Texas Tech's going to beat them, this, that, and the third. And I wear a Spartans hat, not because I cheer for the Spartans. I just like the Spartan on the hat. And so she always gives me shit. It's cool, you know, whatever. But we're watching this game, and I'm like, I said it's going to be like 24-22. That's what I said the final score would be, you know, like before the game started, just fucking around. And then once the game got going, I said, you thought I was fucking around, didn't you? You thought I was messing around. Look at the score right now. And that was, you know, it was ugly, no doubt about it. But once Texas Tech started putting it together in the second half and actually did get to 63, considering, you know, at half, that it actually is an accomplishment, then it was kind of, for me, a little bit even more risk. Either way, sure, it was ugly. But, dude, when you hold a team with that much, you know, with a fair amount of talent and that kind of coaching to 44 points, that says something. I don't care who you are. Now, that Virginia-Oregon game, very tight, 53-49. Virginia had to kind of just dwindle that one down. Like you said, Purdue and Tennessee, the overtime game, I mean, that was freaking phenomenal, dude. 75-73, oh. Duke and Virginia Tech. Duke back-to-back games, just barely got by. You know, Michigan State pretty much handled LSU. I thought they put up a bigger fight, but I think both of us favored Michigan State for a variety of reasons on that. It kind of sucks for LSU. How, you know, successful of a season they had, and then all of a sudden you're thinking this doesn't count. It probably doesn't even count this year. Kentucky and Houston, another tight game, 62-58. That was a really good game. Obviously, Auburn, you know, curb stomped your Kakalaka boys, 97-80. That was a shocker. That was a shocker to me, as far as I knew it'd be high scoring, but they just put it freaking all together. So, you know, we could talk about the first weekend, and that's all dandy, or the first two, you know, days. But when you look at these, I mean, 75-69 Texas Tech Gonzaga, Gonzaga was doing very well in that game. When you look at Virginia and Purdue damn near had the game won, Marshall. Lost in overtime, 80-75. They followed a shooter instead of letting him take the three, and next thing you know, they're getting some points for that. Auburn, you know, does it again, beats Kentucky, 77-71. That's overtime. And then Michigan State and Duke coming all the way down to the wire, 68-67. I mean, when you look at those four games, Marshall, that says it all. Two overtime games and some tight-ass games in between. That Elite Eight, like you said, I really don't know if we're going to be able to top that one, man. I really don't. That was some fun-ass hyped up. And like I said, to me, you know, it kind of felt like Purdue was going to get it done. It felt like they had just enough cushion down the stretch anyway that they were going to get it done. And this game had so much back and forth action, and the three-pointers just matching, you know, Guy and obviously Edwards. I mean, Edwards has been a stud for Purdue all year long. But this freaking guy went off, dude. What did he have, 10 or 11 three-pointers, 40-some-odd points? And it kept getting further. They kept getting further away. It was crazy, man. It was crazy. And obviously Virginia, you know, having to hit the bucket just to tie it to go to overtime. And Edwards is putting threes off the glass down the stretch. Like I said, they missed one free throw. So, and after a missed free throw, Virginia, you know, got the ball, boom, put it right back up, and it tied the game. But Edwards, you know, had such a phenomenal game. I felt pretty bad for him having a turnover that late, pretty bad pass late. But Guy, you know, hit the clutch, you know, free throws to close it out in overtime. But that back and forth in that game was just ridiculous, dude. And the way Edwards is like, fine, all right, dude, you hit a three? I'm going to hit a three. And him and Guy were going back and forth. But, you know, for Virginia, they could have – the writing – it felt like the writing was on the wall there for a second. And because they were on a run. They were on a roll, dude. They were up. And they stretched the lead, and, you know, then all of a sudden Edwards and company come back with Purdue and whatnot. But that game probably was the funnest to watch right there, Marshall, because just to be trading threes like that, and like I said, Edwards just went off in that game. It's like he couldn't miss, dude. And it was like from the start he couldn't miss.
Yeah, that was something. I do think that the karma, I will say there was a little bit of good luck for Virginia because Purdue really shouldn't have been in the game. I'm happy that the game was played. I mean, the ending of the Tennessee game was such a blunder from the refs. Almost like a little bit of karma, from the sport guys for Virginia to miss that free throw, get the tip, and put it back up. Because that's just fair is fair. You got lucky to survive, they got lucky to beat you, you know. But that being said, the Tennessee game versus Purdue, Klein was going off like crazy with Edwards doing a lot. And then in the Virginia-Purdue game, Edwards was going off and Klein had a couple threes. I mean, that whole conference, that was just, yeah, beautiful basketball. And Virginia, I mean, it doesn't matter how you get the job done. Okay, they played a low-scoring game against Oregon. They maybe ran a little more against Purdue. They made the Final Four. I mean, I could honestly care less about the team. I respect the coach. I respect their defensive-based team. But their only goal they truly had to accomplish, I believe, for this tournament was to make the Final Four. I don't think they have to – I don't think they're expected to win it from a fan-based perspective. But after last year's embarrassment, I believe making the Final Four has kind of helped cover that up a little bit. I mean, obviously, we'll never forget them being the first one seed to ever lose. But from an accomplishment standpoint, they reached their goal. And – that, you're right. That was just fun basketball. It's like kind of like when you're playing with your friends growing up and one of your buddies gets hot and you keep feeding him the ball, but then you're playing against a kid in the neighborhood that can do the same thing you do. It's just trading punches back and forth. And there wasn't really a boring moment to, like, sit down and, like, go get a new drink or something. That was pretty much nonstop entertainment for almost the whole game. And saying that, the only thing that comes to my mind for some reason was, if only Gus Johnson was calling that game.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm not sure why that's hitting me, but, like, man, for the game you just broke down and having flashbacks of how fun it was to watch a few nights ago, if Gus Johnson had been on the mic for that game, holy shit, it would have made it even more epic. Going down the bracket, the team they're going to play, I'm honestly surprised. Okay, Auburn did beat my boys. They were a bad matchup for Carolina. they like to run like us. They shoot threes better than us. They beat us. They whooped our ass. It is what it is. I'm not going to make excuses. We got smoked. I thought we could maybe be an Elite Eight team. We didn't quite get there. They outplayed us. They did. And we quit going to bigs, and we started jacking up threes, and that's not our game. Anyways, they beat us handedly. But as Auburn beat UNC handedly, their best player tore his ACL. So you're thinking, okay,
right.
Best player's torn ACL. They play Kentucky this year. They have not had the best success. There's no reason Kentucky, who has their best player back, should lose. And for the first 15-ish minutes of the game, it was pretty much Kentucky in control. The lead was balancing anywhere from 5 to 12-ish, as a 10-point lead, a 7-point lead, whatever. Okay, Kentucky has this game. Auburn lost their best player. It's too hard to replace him. It is what it is. You know, they have a nice run, and it's over. But
and there were
in
a ton of foul problems, too. You know, Auburn, the whole fucking game, was in a ton of foul problems, too, you know?
Yeah. And then in the second half, either Kentucky laid off the gas, Calipari screwed something up, but something happened, and you're like, shit, Auburn now has a 2 to 3 point lead back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there really is no business that they should have won the game. But their guards got hot. They're probably the best three-point shooting team in the country, or they're for sure the best that was around this past weekend statistically, and they got the job done. That was just a miraculous. Now, I can't really name the Auburn players I could for other teams, but shit, their guards.
Yeah, Brown. Bryce Brown.
Brown. They just stepped up and had a great team win. To lose your best player and then to be down for pretty much the whole first half to an in-conference rival who's had your number, I mean, that really does show the team heart, chemistry, whatever sport cliche you want to use, that was exhibited, come back and win that game. And, of course, it was pretty much a Kentucky home game because that fan base is crazy. I mean, that was just a miraculous win where – you know, people, I saw the line for Auburn, and people are like, oh, yeah, I bet Virginia. And it's like, well, dude, what should Auburn care now? You just beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, what do you have? You got nothing to lose. No one thought you'd win that game, so shit, I'd be pretty careful going against them after what they've did the past couple of games. You beat Carolina, Kansas, and Kentucky. You beat the blue bloods of the country. I mean, that's a pretty damn good resume.
Especially Carolina and Kentucky. You know, Kansas wasn't shit this year, but those two, man, you're right. I mean,
agreed.
Who would have guessed that they'd get in through that way? That was the toughest region, as we know.
And I'll touch on Gonzaga, Texas Tech, and I'll let you rip on the Dukies. That Texas Tech and Gonzaga game, same deal, just like Virginia-Purdue. Up and down basketball, phenomenal shooting. Gonzaga didn't play a bad game. I heard someone summarize that, and I was like, that's a beautiful summary. Gonzaga played about a B-plus basketball game, but they got beat
because
Texas Tech played an A-plus game. You know, As I say, Auburn's the best three-point shooting team in the country. Texas Tech has the best defense in the country, but shit, their offense ain't too bad either. They got a couple of lottery players. That was back and forth. Texas Tech would take a 5-point lead. Gonzaga would take a 5-point lead. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, man, Gonzaga's got the experience. Texas Tech hasn't been here before. Mark Few's got the coaching experience just due to tournament record. And it's like, dude, Gonzaga will pull away. And every time they inched a little bit, boom, Texas Tech hit a three. Boom, Texas Tech hit a three. And, you know, defensively, they're solid. I mean, that game was phenomenal, too. I mean, as you said, there wasn't an off game, but I will just say, to Texas Tech's credit, you beat a team who had more experience than you, a more experienced coach, and you showcase that you can score offensively. And they have a Culver. When he gets hot, that dude's special. So Texas Tech, it feels kind of weird saying that they're in the Final Four, but, again, if you're the best team in the country and you have a couple of guys that can get hot, that's a pretty scary combination too, Chris. You know, we're not talking football. Auburn and Texas Tech, you know, SEC football powerhouse and a Big 12 air show, are in the Final Four, and it's due to great three-point shooting, great defense, and confidence to them, because I don't think many people overall thought going into March Madness that they'd both be in the Final Four.
Yeah, and I mean, midway through the full season, not the conference season, but they looked the part early. Then they went through some times where you're like, I don't know, man. They've still got to figure it out offensively. We talked about them a handful of times, and then they turned it up. And they turned it all the way up. And you're right. I mean, they got these quick-ass guards, and they're big. Well, they're big. They're big dudes. You know what I mean? Like, they just defend, like you said, really, really well. And I was really, you know, that Odessi, the big man, he got in foul problems right away. And it kind of felt like, although Texas Tech played pretty well, the Zags were having problems with their threes to start out with. The Zags got a little bit of a lead there in the first half, and Texas Tech would hit like back-to-back threes, and then boom, they would go on a little run. Now, there were some scoring droughts on both sides that tends to happen in these, you know, high-profile games. But, I think it was 9 turnovers, 5 of them from Brandon Clark. Gonzaga was up 37-35. That was just at half. Also, Gonzaga with the offensive rebounding, that really helped them throughout the game, and they just seemed to have like a small lead, 48-43. That was with 13 minutes left. Then the Red Raiders would go on a little run, and then Gonzaga would push it out. And then Gonzaga went on a stretch in the second half. They missed 7 straight field goals until like a power dunk by Clark. But, you know, both teams had, you know, turned up the defense, especially Texas Tech. And when you look at it late, with 7 minutes remaining, the Zags were shooting 33%. They were 1 of 7 from 3 and 15 turnovers just at that time. You know what I mean? So now they were well within range to try to, you know, rally. They did get it to really tighten all that. They got it all the way to 69-67 with 22 seconds left. And obviously they still had a chance there at the end until Perkins, you know, something I don't remember seeing that much in a big game, but Perkins reaching across, you know, on the inbound, and that's obviously a technical. But that's kind of what I like about this field is, there's no one-and-dones in the lineup. I think they're out of all 4 teams, there's 8 seniors in the lineups. And they're just quality teams. And the coaching is there. And it's a different field that may not have, you know, all the glitz and glamour. But, hey, I guess that's Minnesota for you right there. Of course, the Dukies won way back in the day here, which I don't really want to talk about. But because that's a different Dukie. You know, Leitner and Zion are totally different there. Speaking of, though, getting to that game, you know, right away, Michigan State came out and they looked pretty damn good. They were focused. And then Zion kind of went on like his own little run. And Reddish came off the bench and you know, definitely hit some nice threes. I think, you know, the way they closed the way they Michigan State kind of got up on them, Duke came back and then they stretched it to, 30-21. It was the largest deficit of the tournament for the Spartans. And we see that from time to time. I remember that Gonzaga game too. There was moments of that as well. You know, Zion had a second fall, and you're thinking, man, is he going to get that third one? And I think the biggest thing was the defense for Michigan State was making the difference because, you know, Duke had a ton of turnovers, especially Zion and Barrett, which is obviously their two best players. Now, on the second half, you know, it was a drought. It was like, I think it was 10, yeah, for Duke carrying over to the end of that first half and into the second. It was 10 straight possessions where they hadn't scored. It was a 6-minute field goal drought. And then Zion finally scored. And if you look at it, there was like a 3-minute spurt. You know, it was like 10 straight points all by Zion. And you know, it was 41-40. Ward missed a couple of layups. They still were up, but you're thinking, man, Michigan State should probably be up by like 5 or 10 here. The turnovers was 12-5 at that point. So, you know, at that point, they had actually calmed down. Duke, you know, had calmed down. I remember that McQuaid dude made, like, the circus, you know, layup off the glass. That was pretty damn crazy. That was, it was 58-56 at that time, 7 minutes left. Zion had that block three-point attempt. And then, you know, it led to a mean dunk. It was still 4 minutes left. They're only down by three type thing. And Trey Jones had his first turnover in 85 minutes of play. So it stretched over 2.5 games. And even though Duke was up after that point, it was like they never looked back. Michigan State just got that little spurt. I think Goins or whatever, he got a three. I put him up 68-66, and then Barrett missed a free throw. Tried to miss the second one, and well, of course it goes in at that point, which is, you know, just how that happens. That was a good ass game, man. It really came down to the wire, and it kind of felt like Duke was going to win, but only for a couple of minutes of the whole game. Otherwise, it felt like Michigan State just had enough to keep separating them. And I think this Michigan State squad in general, Marshall, is kind of the theme of this Final Four. You know, last year they were just stacked. They probably had, well, they got three or four players that are playing the NBA right now off of last year's team. They had a one and done. They just had a bomb-ass team, but didn't lead to the Final Four. They got beat in the second round. Oh, wait, was it the first round? Or I think that was 2 years ago. Either way, they didn't get to the Sweet 16. So, you know, sometimes in college basketball, less is more. And when the roles are more defined, remember, say this a handful of times a year, there's only one ball. There's only one ball and only one bucket. And the ball has to go into the bucket, right? I'm starting to sound like John Madden here. You hand off the ball, the running back runs, and then he goes and they try to score. And the team who has, you know, more points wins the game. But Michigan State, like I said, less is more, man. They just – Cassius, they have talent. It's not like they didn't have talent, but it was like they had about three or four really solid players and then a variety of role players around that, and they're just a better team overall for it. Anything else that you'd like to speak upon when it comes to Elite Eight, Sweet 16 stuff before we start sinking our teeth into these two games in the Final Four, buddy?
Nah, I think I'm pretty good. I mean, I guess just a Duke note, I'm surprised they didn't make it. I mean, I'm taking a little bit of a shot because I'm a Carolina fan, sure. But
are you, though?
With all
are
the...
you? With the round of 32 in the Sweet 16? That they weren't, that didn't kind of like sent like, hey, this might not happen. Are you really that surprised?
Well, no, it's just, it's hard to imagine with the talent they have, how maybe there wasn't a little bit of a better game plan, you know, cause Zion one-on-one was basically unguardable. So, and they have the guys with him who are talented. It's like they never quite got an offensive flow and they never maybe, it wasn't Coach K's best year at all, by any means. But it's like, you know, there wasn't – maybe the team chemistry never quite developed. As you just said from Michigan State about how last year there was much more NBA talent, same thing with Duke. Tons of NBA talented players, well, three of them, as many people say, but they weren't on the same page because if they were, they wouldn't have had to squeak by a layup miss or a putback miss and then losing a free throw. Yeah, so the offensive flow never quite caught on like it should have. So, not surprised.
And they should have feeded Zion, like you said.
Yeah.
You should have feeded Zion. Every time he got the ball, he's got this spin move that's so quick. I think that's what people are kind of like, well, what is he? What do you mean, like in the pros? What's he going to be? He's going to be a basketball player that plays in the pros, dude. That's what he's going to be. Like, what are you talking about? Like, well, he's not a stretch four, so everybody has to be a stretch four then? Like, this guy, the way he gets his positioning, the little quick little footwork, the spin move to either get in position or when he has the ball, when the doubles come, he knows how to pass the ball. Like, he's just got this craftiness to him, Marshall, that it's like, give the ball to him and good things will happen. And he gets low on his dribble, considering how big he is. He can dribble. And even when you got him beat, like that one dude had him beat off the dribble. Remember that? He beat him off the dribble. He's like, oh, he got Zion. Oh, no, he didn't. He fucking forget it. Zion took it off the dribble on that kind of like partial break. You know what I'm talking about, right? It was like a partial break.
Yeah.
And he just whooped on it. He's like, oh, everyone's like, oh. And then he took a step and took two steps as far as that, you know, at the same time, planted and jumped and swatted. And was like, oh, yeah, you thought you had him. But I agree, like, when I say this year, I don't necessarily say it was a bad coaching year, but in moments where you needed it, and obviously that was without Zion, and then in that game, you needed to feed Zion, no doubt about it. Now, you know, maybe it was the flow of the game, whatever. But timeouts, call a timeout then, Coach K, if you're not getting what you want out of your players. And then I also think that we found out something about R.J. Barrett, and that is when he doesn't have the ball, he's not at nearly as effective as a basketball player. Now, wherever he goes, guess what, Marshall? They're going to give him the fucking ball. You know what I mean? So when he does have the ball,
yeah,
the guy can spread. Like, how many assists did he have in those last two games? He had a ton of assists. He had 11 in that one game. The guy is a headsy player. And I can see the McGrady stuff that people talk about because he almost looks like him, like his body type. So I think once when he has the ball in his hand, he's phenomenal. And maybe they should have just done that. Trey was hitting those threes finally the last couple of games. So it should have been a 2-3-man game right there. I totally agree. But Barrett is not really a good second or a phenomenal elite second guy like he is when he has the ball in his hands. I think we found that out too. What do you say about that? Because it was like, hey, can the second, you know, guy in the draft stand up and do something here? You know, that type of thing at times in the tourney. I was kind of like, damn, dude, like, how much more does Zion have to do here? The guy's putting up Kareem Abdul-Jabbar numbers through four games. Like, what else do you want from the guy? That's the one that the thing that stood out for me with Barrett, but odds are he's going to go to a bad team, so he won't have to be the second or third guy.
Yeah, that's true. Again, it makes you wonder, should he be that high of a pick? I mean, he was given that label for almost the whole year, but for, you know, like crunch time when his team needed him, it wasn't exactly playing like he was the number two or three, whatever. But anyways, I'm not going to shed a tear that Duke didn't make it because that ruined a lot of brackets. But to speak about a team that Duke did play, to transition to teams that did go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, my hometown in your backyard, I guess we'll start with Virginia, who did play Duke a couple times this year, came up short against an Auburn team who, again, I'm greatly surprised they're there. I'll say it one more time because that's how shocked I was. I did not think they were going to be Kentucky at all after losing their best player. Now, and wow, this is like three times in a row now, but this conversation is perfect because as I was watching that as I was watching the Purdue-Virginia game a few nights ago, I was speaking to an Auburn fan, and he actually summed up really nicely. I was like, so when you lost your guy on Auburn, you know, is that your whole team? And he's like, well, that's our one NBA player, but we have college players who are good players, so we're not dead. We lost our lottery pick, which hurts us because he's our most skillful player, but he's not one of those, you know, guys that is necessarily a college player. It kind of ties into what we've been speaking of lately. And, you know, so with that being said, it kind of sums up to who are we to really doubt Auburn? Okay, now, obviously, different strategies, completely different strategies for this upcoming game, Chris. Auburn will want to run as fast as they can for pretty much the whole freaking game because that's how they play. They run up and down. they shoot a shitload of threes. Their guards are super quick, and they're going to hit some threes. If they hit a lot of them, I would say Virginia's in a lot of trouble. Meanwhile, Virginia is going to slow them down immensely. So this does sound cliche, but the higher the score, probably the better chance Auburn has. The lower the score, Virginia's probably not going to lose the game. It is a matchup situation that is completely polar opposite. I mean, it is rare for me to come on our podcast and say, man, Carolina got outran. That's normally what we do to teams.
Yeah,
but they outran us. Like, we, Carolina, and it's funny because Bruce Pearl's like, you know, we've tried to make our team like Carolina, and we play them day and we beat them in their system. And that was 100% right. They did outrun a system that they've developed themselves. So it'll be curious to see how it will go. Now, I guess the question I'll ask you is that, okay, we've said they go back and forth with Auburn likes to run, Virginia likes to play D. I think we've now seen some moments, though, where Virginia doesn't mind getting into a little more of an up, fast tempo, start chucking three game. Because that's what they did, as you nicely said, against Purdue. Is that Virginia basketball? Probably not. But they went against the hottest guy, one-man show of the tournament. You could say Carson Edwards' performance against Virginia was probably the hottest one-person show of the tournament them in that game. So I guess I'll ask you, and this is our question and answer, but do we think Virginia's going to go for a little bit of a slow-tempo game? Or with how you just played, do you maybe have a little more of a mindset of, guys, we just ran up and down the court with Purdue and beat them. Maybe we should do the same thing at Auburn. What do you think kind of with that setup, and how do you think the game's going to play out with tempo? Because it's a 50-50 shot, Chris, I guess. And again, we can only predict, but what's your gut say, brother?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll just kind of go with the flow. I don't think they'll go out of their way to push it. But pushing it, of course, you're going to have almost about 5 days off. So I was going to say, if you do push them and run them up and down the court, one less player that you depend on can add up a little bit. But I think they'll just kind of play it by ear. And I think it's key, though, what you said about they have the confidence now to do it. And that's the thing about them, offensively speaking. What the hell was that? Offensively speaking, they can knock them down now from the outside. They got a variety of players that can do it, not just guy. And so I think that is the difference. But like you said, even more on Auburn, like it's you know, earlier this year they lost to Kentucky in a really, really tight game. That's way back in January. And they went on. They had some injuries. They went on, you know, a funk. They got the second time in February, late February they played them. Got just housed 80-53. So, you know, the old three time is a charm type thing. That's tough, you know what I mean? But in basically after that game, they still haven't lost since that game. And, you know, mind you, they played Tennessee twice. They played, like we said, Kentucky and North Carolina. The craziest thing about this was the first round, dude. 78-71, they just barely sneak by New Mexico State. It's like, here's a team that could have been beat in the first frickin' round, dude. So it just kind of adds to it. But I think that if they had it their way, they would grind it down. But they are more versatile. And of course, I'm speaking of Virginia to answer your question. I still think they want to slow it down. They want that type of pace. Those guards are frickin' quick, dude, for Auburn too. So they're gonna have to get out in front of them. But I mean, I don't think they're intimidated, but you kind of go in there saying we want to, you know, establish our game and then go from there. I like Virginia in this one. And just to add a little bit more on Virginia too, you know, it wasn't just last year, although last year stands out as what the hell just happened, because it, of course, that's the one that everyone will remember. You know, they lose in the first round as a number one seed, first time ever. You know, it could be 30 years until that happens again. Who knows? It may never happen again. It's tough to say. But so it's that, right? It is that. But it's also these last handful of years they really remind me of Villanova. Villanova and Pittsburgh were knocking at the door of becoming great programs. But remember, now Pitt never got over the hump. They ended up, you know, not doing it. But they had some good squads there for a while in a row. Same with Virginia. In fact, Michigan State, a couple years back, I think they met like in the round of 32 and then in the Sweet 16 or something like that. Like, you know, it wasn't just last year. It was winning the ACC when you have North Carolina and Duke in there. Winning it, clearly, is same with this year, too. They tied and then just falling out in the tournament. So, you know, it was tough for me to pick them out of there. Not that I didn't think they could do it, but I just thought, I don't think they can get all the way over the hump. And here they are, like you said. Now they've done it. Now you still, to become an elite program, you got to win a championship, but they needed this to happen so bad. And that's just college sports right there. The very next year, you make the trip to the Final Four, what everybody wanted. And you think North Carolina, you think Duke, out of those three teams with Virginia added, the fact that they were the squad that made it, that's pretty damn impressive. But I'm going to go with Virginia on this one. Also, a handful of extra days helps exploit what they don't do well without that big. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that makes sense. But just for the sake of it, I'll take the little Auburn joyride. I think that their guards will find a way. I think Virginia will find a way to, I mean, I can't even say collapse, but just I think they'll come up a little bit short at the championship. They made the Final Four, but I think Auburn's threes and up-tempo will be just enough to squeak by.
Cam does have eligibility, so maybe they could pop him at power forward. He's clearly good enough. What do you think, Cam Newton?
Let's put Chuck back out there. Put in Barkley. I love that, man. Let's let him gear up and suit up for them Auburn Tigers, War Eagle.
I think, though, when they go back and check his, the admissions and all, I don't think he's going to be eligible. I don't think not many players were eligible back in the day. He admits it. He even said, I didn't even know where the hell my classes were because we didn't have to attend. He literally admits it. Go ahead.
Flipping the sides, going over to Sparty, who will have a lot of fans there, pretty close drive, probably the most recognized decorated team out of the four in the tournament. Michigan State faces off against Texas Tech. Again, as I stated earlier, you have the best defense in the country facing one of the best coaches in the country. You also detailed that Michigan State's not as loaded as they were last year with NBA talent, but their team is also still around the Final Four, which has not been the case for a while. This should be another excellent game, like the Elite Eight games were for both these teams. I mean, Texas Tech defensively, they're not going to let you run them out the gym. Michigan State is just that steady, scrappy, make smart plays. They got Cassius. They got Izzo. I mean, this should be a pretty damn good game. Obviously, they have not played each other this year. My gut leans me towards Texas Tech. I think that they're gelling at the perfect time of the year. At the start of the season, we're like, man, do they have the abilities to close down the stretch? Now you have Culver and Mooney. Those guys can score. They put up points. They don't let you score easy. I don't know. It's hard because you got to give Michigan State credit for being Duke, but you got to do the same thing for Texas Tech being Gonzaga. For some reason, maybe it's because I live in Texas. I don't know. I mean, I truly don't cheer for either of these teams that much. But I'm leaning a little bit towards Texas Tech, Chris. I just think that with having those guys, the Mooney and Culver, going off lately and having such a set defense, I think they'll be just enough and barely just enough to find a way to knock off Izzo in the Final Four. I'm not quite sure. It's Texas Tech's first ever Final Four. They're on a joyride like Auburn is. I don't know. I think this is an even matchup. I don't think there's a huge X's and O's mismatch. You can say that Texas Tech's defense is better, but Michigan State's got a better coach. Like, this should be a fun game up and down the whole way. But I'm just going to lean barely towards Texas Tech.
They made the Elite Eight last year, didn't they? Not to interrupt you, but they made the Elite Eight last year, didn't Texas Tech? Elite Eight? I think so.
Okay. Well, as you break that down,
I'm looking at it from an experience. I'm looking at it from an experience state of mind.
Sure.
From last year, I'm pretty sure they did. I'll check really quick. Unless you're checking, I don't know. I'm almost positive they did.
Well,
yeah,
they
got beat by Nova in the Elite Eight. Yep. That's what happened.
Oh, shit, okay. All right, so
they got experience.
Yeah, first ever Final Four. Yeah,
right,
true.
But they got experience coming back, like tourney experience, too.
Fair. Yeah, I guess I'm leaning underdogs on both. Yeah, I'll go Texas Tech. I think they're playing just slightly better basketball than Michigan State, and I mean that slightly with just a smudge ahead. What's your gut say on this one, my friend? Who you taking, Sparty, which is probably the consensus, or you taking the school normally known for football to have a basketball appearance in the national championship?
I would say they're equally, if not more, known for basketball than football. To be honest with you,
well,
and Izzo will choke you out. Izzo will choke you out. So I'll take Izzo in that one. Yeah, I think the Spartans are going to win because if they don't, Izzo will choke them out. You see what I'm saying? So does Winston really want to get choked out, you know, his last year as a Sparty? I don't think so. No, I think you're right. In fact, I think I did the numbers. 15 of 17 games Texas Tech has won, 15 out of 17. And then it's 14 out of 15, I think, or 13 out of 14 for Michigan State. So you can make a case that these are the hottest teams. You know, Auburn had a nice run, same with Virginia, but these two are the hottest teams. And I got to say, to me, I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, this is the national title game. Well, what do you think about that statement? Whoever wins this wins the title, obviously, is what I mean by that.
I would bet that, yes. I'd agree with you on that. I would bet that favor. I'm with you. I wouldn't bet it like five stars, but I would make a wager that yes, whoever wins this one, I think, well, they may not be favored because I bet you Virginia will be favored over Texas Tech, but I would bet Texas Tech. Yes, I agree with that statement. Yeah.
So, this is for the whole kit and caboodle here, and when you look at them, It's really defense is the difference, but it's not like Michigan State is a bummy defensive team. They shoot the ball better. They out-rebound the shit out of it, 40 to 34. Assists per game, 19 to 14. Like, steals, there's one, steals. And not that ultimately means a whole lot. The one thing that sticks with me is their offense. And as we know, that's kind of the one thing that kept us going, I don't know. I'm not sure. This is going to be a phenomenal game. I think it'll be played in the high 60s. Just barely, maybe 70s. I don't think, 78 and 73 is what they average. I see both of them probably sneaking under that. I'm going with the Sparty. I'm going Michigan State and Izzo to advance to Monday night. And I'll just say it right there. I'm going Michigan State to win it all against Virginia, being the fact that, we've already kind of talked about it, being that this, the Texas Tech, Michigan State, we feel like whoever wins this is going to win the title. But it will be an ugly, grinded out, kind of like Butler Duke from a chunk of years ago. Remember how low scoring that game was in UConn? When they won, the last time they won, I forgot who they were playing, Marshall, but it was low freaking scoring. I feel like that's going to be that, with Virginia. So I got Michigan State, Virginia, and Michigan State cutting down those nets up here in Minneapolis, like a lot of people say, especially in the South. Oh, you're from Minneapolis? Yeah, man. I've never been there, but I've heard good things about Minneapolis.
I didn't know we're brother cities with Indianapolis. That's new to me, Chris. That's definitely – I know it's Minneapolis and St. Paul. I did not know that the Indianapolis
yeah.
Colts are also in our backyard. That's – wow. Well, I learned something every day, I guess.
So we do have championships. Sweet. We got the Colts. Shit, I forgot about that. Awesome.
I mean, again, I'm going a little bit of an upset-ish pick with Auburn. I wouldn't bet it, but that's just kind of my – pick on the show for fun. I do think they're on a crazy ride, but I'm with you though. I do think that either team would beat Virginia or Auburn. So I will take Texas Tech with their defense and great play to find a way to knock off Izzo. And if you can knock off Izzo, what keeps you from beating Bruce Pearl or Tony Bennett? So I will take Texas Tech with their first ever Final Four appearance, making a championship run. I think Texas Tech Virginia would be, as you mentioned, a very low scoring game. And you're talking about two of the best defenses in the whole country. That could be a 50s ish or high 50s, low 60s game. Again, I still think it'd be pretty fun to watch with as fun as those teams are. You're taking Sparty. I'm taking Texas Tech. I hope that we, of the three games we get, I hope we just get one of them that's great. You know, we got so spoiled this past weekend. I got a feeling that we both agree that Sparty and Texas Tech should be phenomenal. There's no guarantee, but I'd imagine it should be a close game. Virginia Auburn could get a little bit ugly. Virginia could have a great game plan. Auburn feels the true effects of their star being out, but I'm feeling we'll have a pretty decent weekend. It is fun that that Duke isn't there and that it's not Kentucky and it's not Kansas. Obviously not Carolina. It sucks for me to say that, but it's a little bit fun to see different teams. When we do our college football show, we haven't even started the show yet for next year, but you'd bet a lot of money that Bama's going to be in the Final Four. And you'd kind of have to be crazy to go against that. Not many people had this Final Four picked off at the start of the year. Maybe people could say Michigan State was a Final Four pick, but that wouldn't be like a confident lock like you would say for Bama. It is kind of fun to see teams who are not massive Cinderella stories, like an 11 or 12 seed who get smoked, but teams from not quite normally there come there. I think that should be an enjoyable weekend for the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Let me ask you this question, Chris, to kind of wrap up our Final Four picks. You got Sparty, I got Texas Tech. What player do you think could put on the best chance of pulling a Carson Edwards this weekend? What guy for any of the four teams is going to have just kind of a going off moment? Because someone's going to do it. Someone's going to get hot and carry their team. If you had to put money down, a few bucks down, who do you think is going to be the weekend surprise, you could say?
Well, first of all, it's immoral to place bets, so I don't do that. I don't know what kind of show you're talking about here, but this is we have sponsors now, Marshall. What the hell, dude? That's a good question, and I'm going to go with not Ray Guy, but Guy, not the punter from the Raiders, but Guy, the long, lanky dude for Virginia. He kind of already just went off, so that's capable. That Bryce Brown obviously would be one on there, too. I know you said one, but what am I going to do? And then obviously Cassius Winston. So I'd say out of all three of those, I'll go with Cassius Winston. He just has this way of pissing you off. He's not the quickest dude, but he's not slow. But it kind of feels like he's just so smooth. He's in slow motion out there, and he can just single-handedly, whether it's passing or shooting or whatever, he can hit the three, he can get to the rack, and he can also pull up for that, 12-footer. 14-footer or runner. The guy is just a really quality college player, and I think he's going to make for a pretty decent bench player as well in the league. But I'll go Cassius Winston since I'm picking Sparty and my guy Izzo.
I will take Culver then for Texas Tech because that is my pick too. Again, it's been a pretty damn good basketball season for us to break down. We will clearly be back. For once in the past couple of years, Carolina's not involved. So I'll be able to do this next show peacefully. After the Villanova heartbreak, I remember I woke up from a nap. You'd been texting me for about a half an hour saying, dude, we're doing the show, doing the show, doing the show. You're like, oh, never mind. You're not going to make it. It is what it is. I call him midway through feeling like, you know, I lost
That's
my dog.
Right.
You know, so.
I forgot about that.
And then I got some retribution the next year when we won the title. And that was, you know, I couldn't wait to do that show. So my emotions will be pretty calm. I don't have any money down yet on any of the games that could change, but it'll be a neutral perspective relatively of how the games are. So hopefully the Minneapolis people get treated to some great games this weekend. As Chris said, you know, we NBA is coming now. Again, for about the past month, it gets a little bit boring because, you know, the playoff teams are pretty much all locked in. The seeding can change, obviously, but the playoff teams are pretty well set up. My Golden State Warriors keep having soap opera drama, so I'm hoping that they can win this year and then kind of fix some of that shit. But, yeah, we'll be doing NBA soon, right? Or well, NBA starts after the college basketball season ends. So, any last words, my friend?
Yeah, and just to double up on that, you know, for those who have been there since last August or in August, you know, late August for college football, we call it the College Ball Show because it's college football. Then come mid-January, we go all the way to college basketball, all the way to the title game, like you said, and it's called the NBA Banter Podcast, okay? That's what it is. It's the NBA Playoffs Banter Podcast. We're going to do it. We may not do it every week, like 6 days, 7 days, because we play it off the series. So if we make a bunch of predictions and they basically turned out how we think they've turned out, how everybody thinks they've turned out, we kind of wait until maybe to get to a game five to be like, all right, this is a decider here. It's a 2-2 series type thing. So it's basically on an every week schedule, but we'll be taking that NBA playoff podcast all the way through April, through May, through June, obviously, with the finals. And then we have an NBA draft show. And then sometime in July, and it might be 17 of them this year because there's so many damn free agents and so many stories. So sometime in July, I think it was two shows last year, right? Or was it a third? I think it was two shows. I think we did one, and then we had to do another one, I believe.
Yeah.
Because there was just so much shit going on. So we just had to do it. Oh, that was because What's-His-Toes got traded to Toronto. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
what sounds right.
I think that's what it was. So, I mean, there's literally like nine players that you go, oh, he's a free agent? Holy shit. You know, everybody was talking about last year, and for good reason. You got Bronny and stuff, but the shit's going to hit the fan this summer. We will definitely be covering that all the way to July, the NBA Playoffs Banter Podcast. Keep your ear and eyes open for it.
All right. Well, I hope you all get an enjoyable basketball game Saturday. Monday is the championship. We'll do a show very, very shortly after that. And until then, enjoy your weekend. The boys are out. Have a great night. Peace.